Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is the 5th of November in the year 2009, and we are in the Full Moon Meditation Hall, New Hamlet. Shall have the ordination ceremony for the aspirants on the 20th of this month. And hopefully in Vietnam, the aspirants would have the ordination at the same time. When we speak of an aspirant, we think of the will, the aspiration that is there in the person of that aspirant. To aspire means to aspire to something. There should be a kind of desire, a kind of deep desire that pushes you to go into that direction. And that desire, that aspiration, make up the vitality of that person. If that person is determined to go in that direction, because there is a force is pushing him or her into that direction. And that force is the deepest desire that we can find in that person. In the teaching of the Buddha, that aspiration, that desire is a kind of food. In the sutra on the four sources of nutriments, we learn that volition is a source of nutriment. Each of us, in order to have enough vitality, joy, should have an aspiration, a deep desire. So it's good to sit down and to look deeply to recognize our deepest desire, the deepest desire in us. Without a deep desire, a person is not very much alive. He or she should have a deep desire. There are desires that can bring suffering, despair. But there are kind of desires that can bring a lot of happiness. There are people who do not understand the teaching of the Buddha. They think that the path of the Buddha is to destroy all kind of desire. That's not true. When you are motivated by the desire to practice in order to transform your suffering, to have the peace, the compassion in you so that you can help other people, that is the kind of desire that will not cause suffering. That can only bring happiness. And that is why to have a deep desire in us is a subject that is much discussed in the circle of Buddhist practitioners. In Buddhism, we speak of the mind of love, the mind of enlightenment. I mean, you have the willingness, the determination to get enlightened, to get liberated. to love. Bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment, the mind of love, is what each practitioner should have. And every one of us has a seed of that desire in us. And if we encounter, if we are put in contact with a kind of environment, a good environment, if we can meet a person that can touch the seed of that deep desire in us, and then it will manifest into a source of strength. Sometimes a person does not look like having any desire, any aspiration. But to say that she does not have the seed of that desire, of that aspiration, is not true. That the seed of that desire, that vitality, is always in her, in him. It has been buried a long time under many layers of suffering. And that is why it has not had the chance to manifest. So if you get in touch with the Sangha, in touch with great beings who have great aspiration, you might have a chance to have that seed of deep aspiration in you to be watered. And suddenly you find yourself having a lot of energy, having a lot of force. To become an aspirant, in order to be ordained as a monk or as a nun, does not come from the desire to live a quiet life without much disturbance. That is not a strong desire. To look for a peaceful place to live without too much ups and downs in the world, that is not a very big desire. Siddhartha Gautama did not have that small desire. He had a very big desire to go, to look for the path to transform himself in order to help the world. It should be a big desire. So the Sangha is made of individuals, people who have great aspirations. And when we come to the Sangha, we see and we meet these people, suddenly we feel that the deep desire in us is water. And we can identify that deep desire in us. And suddenly we feel a lot of vitality, strength in us. I was only 16 when he decided to become a monk. At the age of 16, you don't know very much about Buddhism, the Dharma, and things like that. But that there was a deep desire. He did not know the path of this. He did not know exactly what he will do when he becomes a monk. And yet he had a deep desire. He had a conviction that becoming a monk, he could do many things. He could be of help to his country, to his society, and so on. You cannot explain that. That seed may have been transmitted to him by many generations of ancestors. And there was a deep desire. The desire was so strong that you think that if you cannot become a monk, then you cannot be a happy person. Not to become a monk does not mean you shave your head, you wear the robe of a monk, and you, you live the life of a monk. Now it's much more than that. You want to do something, to be someone, to do something for the world. And you know that the path might not be easy. There will be obstacles on the path, but you are not afraid. Because your intention is so strong, your aspiration is so strong. And this is not limited to monks and nuns, monastics. A layperson can become a bodhisattva, a great bodhisattva, helping so many people. Actually, we see many bodhisattvas alive who are doing their best in order to help the world, to save our planet. Most of them are lay people. Most of the bodhisattvas are lay people. So, so everyone, one of us, whether we are a monastic or a lay person, in order to be a real bodhisattva, trying to be of help to the world, we should be endowed with a strong aspiration. The seed of our aspiration is there. We should be able to expose it to the watering of the Sangha. And when you are inhabited by that desire, that aspiration, that bodhicitta, your eyes shine, and you walk with determination on your path. You know what to do, where to go. You have one direction. And if a bodhisattva, if a monk is capable of preserving that vitality in himself, in herself, she will succeed as a monk, as a nun, as a bodhisattva. The most important thing for a monk, a nun, a bodhisattva to do is to preserve that deep desire, so that he or she will never give up. Even if there are so many obstacles in front of him or her. And that is why that person needs a good environment. An environment that can nourish that aspiration. Otherwise, that aspiration will be eroded. We can speak of volition, of aspiration as the first source of nutriment. As far as a spiritual life is concerned, volition, aspiration is the first source of nutriment. Tư niệm thực We know that with that aspiration, still alive, we have a lot of energy to work on. And that is why we need a kind of environment in order to maintain that aspiration alive. And that environment is a kind of collective energy. That has the capacity to nourish the aspiration that we have in us. It is a collective energy consciousness. Thức. And here we speak of the environment. If you are surrounded by the people who have a strong aspirations, you have a chance. Because people who have a strong aspiration, they produce together a collective energy. And if you are embraced by that collective energy, and then your aspiration will never fade away, will never be eroded. If you live among bodhisattvas, if you live among the people who have a strong intention to practice and help people, and then you will never lose your bodhicitta. You will never lose your aspiration. And that is why the second source of nourishment is upholding, preserving the first source of nourishment. And that is why the second source of nourishment, as far as spiritual life is concerned, is consciousness, collective consciousness, collective energy. Generated by a group of people. If we live among people who only think of consuming, who are full of hate and anger, and that collective energy is not good for us. We will lose our bodhicitta. We will lose our good aspiration after some time. And that is why we should not continue to be in that environment. We have to go away as soon as possible. And our children who live in such an environment will suffer also. And that is why we should look for a place. We should look for an environment where we can get that wholesome collective energy in order for our aspiration to be nourished. And once you have found that good environment, you should stick to it. And if that environment is being threatened by the new conditions of society, you try your best in order to protect and and to preserve that environment. This is what our young brothers and sisters in Prajna Temple are trying to do. They know that it is the Sangha that nourishes them, and they don't want to separate from the Sangha. They try their best in order to preserve the Sangha and to leave the Sangha. They don't want to go away from the Sangha. Because the Sangha is the place where you can nourish your environment. When you are, when you have that strong, wholesome aspiration in you, you have the spiritual strength. That help you to continue your path. And that spiritual strength is also the best contribution you can make to your Sangha, to your people. Because a group of people with that have this spiritual strength can be the refuge, can be the nourishment for so many people. And when you get in touch with that group of people, that Sangha, you feel that the seat of the aspiration in you is touched, and suddenly you have a lot of energy, a lot of vitality within yourself. So if you are an aspirant, and if your aspiration is strong, even if you have not been ordained as a monk, your presence is in the Sangha is already something very positive, because you are contributing to the beauty, to the strength of the Sangha by your aspiration. Because you have that aspiration, that is why they call you an aspirant. The other day, during the night, I was thinking about the ceremony of the transmission of the five mindfulness trainings. And it seems that we lack something in the process of the transmission. Because according to the tradition, every time you want to be to receive the precept, you have to make a formal request. Whether you want to be ordained as a novice or as a bhikshu or bhikshuni, or Shishramana, you always have to do a formal request. That formal request shows that you have the wish, the strong wish, in order to receive the precepts. Of course, our aspirants will, maybe in next week, be guided by a big brother in order to make the formal request to be ordained. But in our transmission of the five mindfulness trainings, we don't have that formal request yet. So that is something lacking in our practice. Therefore, Thầy suggests that from now on, before we do the ceremony of transmission five mindfulness trainings, we should have a formal request. Because the five mindfulness trainings as they are described now in the new version is a real path of a Bodhisattva. If you accept, you make the vow to live according to the five mindfulness trainings, you are already on the path of a Bodhisattva, the path of great understanding and the path of love, and that is a very big event in your life. And therefore, they suggest that from now on, before we do the transmission of the five mindfulness trainings, we should ask a senior member of the Sangha to come up and lead all the aspirants. Means the ones who have the intention to receive the five mindfulness trainings to come up and to bow to the three jewels and formally ask for the transmission of the five mindfulness trainings. And that is something that is lacking in our liturgy. And we have to put it into our chanting book. Because that is a very important moment. And you ask for the transmission before you get it. Because receiving the five mindfulness trainings means that you want to become a Bodhisattva, a great being, practicing great understanding, great love in order to be of help to the world. It is no small event. And therefore, there should be a formal request for ordination. In a retreat that lasts 5 or 6 days, there is always a presentation of the five mindfulness trainings for participants. And we should have enough time for them to consider whether they want to join the community of practitioners. Because if they really want to join the community of practitioners, and then receiving the five mindfulness trainings is very crucial. And if we have studied the new version of the five mindfulness trainings, we see that this is the path of the Buddha. This is the path of the Bodhisattva. And when we make the vow to receive these five trainings, we want really to become a Bodhisattva, a great being. And therefore, we need time in order to reflect on that and to make the determination. And Dharma teachers and others who are helping participants of the retreats, should make it very clear that taking the five mindfulness trainings is a very big event in their life. And the moment when you touch the earth in front of the three jewels and receive the five mindfulness trainings, that is a great moment, change in your life, because you get that strength, that determination, that great aspiration to live in Sri Way that you can change your life, and you change the life of the world. So to receive the five trainings is not to be called a Buddhist, but to really become a Bodhisattva. And a Bodhisattva is someone who has a very powerful spiritual strength in him or in her. And if you get, can get that strength in yourself, you become very alive, very strong. So we know that in the life of a practitioner, we should keep our aspiration, our volition alive. We should continue to build it. And in order to preserve it fully, we have to be with a group of people, with a sangha, that can provide us with that collective strength, collective energy, so that we can continue. And that is the second source of nutriment for a spiritual practitioner. And if we already have that spiritual strength, and then it's very easy for us to refuse the consumption of the things that will bring suffering to us, the sensory impression. Sense, impression. Sukta. The novel that we read, the magazine that we consume, the film that we watch, the music that we listen to, they are sense impressions. And if they are wholesome source of nutriment, and then we can preserve the health of our body and our mind. And we have to practice mindfulness of consumption so that everything that we consume will only bring peace and well-being to our body and our mind. For people who don't have a strong aspiration, who are not protected by a collective energy of spirituality, to practice this is difficult. But for those of us who have a strong aspiration, who are with a good sangha, practicing this becomes very easy. We are able to release that kind of desire very easily. Desire to consume the things that bring craving, violence, despair into our body and our mind. We don't need that kind of consumption anymore because we have very good things to consume every day. We prefer walk meditation instead of consuming the kind of music or or entertainment that that does not do good to our body and our mind. And doing work and meditation is a kind, is also a kind of consumption. Every step can bring you solidity and freedom. Every step can help you touch the wonders of life, refreshing and healing. So that is also consumption. And that belongs to the third category of nutriment, sense impressions. And of course, it's also easy when you come to the fourth source of nutriment, namely edible food. When you have that kind of strong aspiration, when you live with such a sangha, when you know how to consume only the things that are good for your body and your mind, and then it's so easy for you to be a vegetarian. And you don't feel that you need to drink alcohol or to eat meat in order to be happy. And it's so easy for you to live in such a way that can help preserve our planet. So as far as spiritual life is concerned, I think you have to present the four nutriments in the kind of order that we just presented. Begin with the volition, the aspiration. When you join a sangha with the mind of bodhisattva, you recognize that there are people you can look up to as big brothers, big sisters, because they are doing very well in the practice. They are happy people. They are happy with their practice. They are happy with serving the Sangha. They are helping with helping the people to come who have come to the Sangha in order to practice. You see that they have a lot of joy doing these kind of things, serving the Sangha and helping the people to come who come to for the practice. They are not a Dhamma teacher yet. And yet when a person comes, they want to be sure that that person knows how to enjoy walking, sitting, breathing. And they are ready, they are eager to help with anyone that come to the Sangha for the practice. It would be a pity that you have come to Plum Ridge 3 days already, but you don't know how to really enjoy walking and breathing. And if you are a good member of the Sangha, you always try to help, even if you are not a Dhamma teacher. you are not responsible for that. But because you have the mind of love in you, so when you see anyone, you would like to help him or her to enjoy the practice right away. Even if you are you have not been ordained as a novice yet, you have that kind of kindness, that kind of love, that kind of readiness to help already. You don't need a formal ceremony in order to become a bodhisattva. And of course, when you are in a sangha, you will notice there are people who still have difficulties. They have been there quite a long time, but they still have a lot of weaknesses. And you don't say that, well, how come that a person who has lived here 3 years, 5 years, and yet still like that? And if you think like that, you will lose your faith in the Dharma. Because when you look deeply, you see that that you are a continuation of your ancestors, of your parents. The talents that you have, and have come from your ancestors. If you are doing well in the practice, that is at least partly because of your ancestors. Ancestors have transmitted to you seeds, good seeds. And if you have enough intelligence, patience, happiness to embrace the practice, that's thanks to your ancestors, your parents also. And that is why when you touch the earth, you open your hand and you say that, dear Buddha, dear ancestors, I know that I am your continuation. I have nothing to be proud of. All the talents that I have, all the things that I have achieved, that's thanks to you. I only continue you. So you are not caught in arrogance. You are not caught in a complex of superiority. You are free. And that way, to touch the earth is not really an act of devotion. It is a meditation. You touch the earth. You surrender yourself to the earth. You open yourself and you say that you are just a continuation of your ancestors, your spiritual ancestors, and your blood ancestors. Dear ancestors, I am your continuation. I have nothing to be proud of. So you can cultivate your humility, your insight of no self, while you touch the earth. And that is why touching the earth is not really an act of devotion. You are not asking for anything. You are meditating in order to touch the nature of your no self. When I was 16, ordained as a Buddhist monk, I did not understand really the practice of touching the earth. And yet, they already told me that before you bow to the Buddha, you have to visualize that the Buddha is empty of itself. And you are also empty of a self. A Buddha is made only of non-Buddha elements. And you are made also of non-you elements. You have not seen yourself until you see all the non-you elements in you. When you look into yourself, you see you are made of ancestors. You are made of culture, civilization, society, education, and things like that. And once you recognize that you have no self, you are made only of no self element, and you begin to see yourself. You know who you are. You know your true emptiness. And when you look at the Buddha, you see the Buddha is also empty of self. Not only the Buddha has no self, but the Dharma has no self. In Mahayana Buddhism, we learn that the Dharma is made only of the non-Dharma elements. The Buddha Dharma is made of the world Dharma. Phật Pháp, tức Thế Gian Pháp. Buddha Dharma is made of elements in the world. Anything can be used in order to become the Buddha Dharma. So before you bow to the Buddha, you visualize the one who bows and the one who is bowed to. They are both by nature empty. Dear Buddha, I am the bower. I am empty. And you are the one I bow to. You are also empty. That is why you can communicate very well. If you are only you and I, only me, no communication possible. So that is what they taught me when I was 16. How could I understand that? So difficult. And in fact, when you bend down and touch the earth, you surrender yourself, you become the Buddha, and the Buddha becomes you. And this is why touching the earth is not an act of devotion. It's not asking for something. That is a meditation. And when we touch the true nature of our no self, and then all complexes are gone. The complex of superiority, the complex of inferiority. Of course, we have weaknesses. There are things difficult for us to do, but we are not ashamed because we know that this is also a continuation. We are the heritage of the past. We have to accept ourselves like that. And it begins by there. If we have some weakness to be transformed, that weakness belongs to our ancestors also. So if we are able to transform our weaknesses, we do it for our parents, our ancestors. And they expect us to do that for them. So you are not caught in the complex of inferiority either. You are free. The insight of no self will liberate you. So when you come to a sangha, you might see that there are members of the sangha who are not doing well. And you don't despise them. You say that, well, they have received seeds of difficulties from the ancestors. That is why they are still having difficulties. But with this sangha, they have a chance. If they don't transform now, and then maybe next year, or the year after next. So when you look like that, you suddenly have loving kindness, compassion, brotherhood toward him or her. You say, well, he has practiced 7 years, and yet he's still like that. So you continue to preserve your aspiration intact. And that is one of the things that an aspirant should know. When he or she is accepted in the community of monks and nuns, they go see wonderful brothers and sisters, and they go see some brothers and sisters who are still having difficulties. And they love them all. They are able to love them all and accept all of them because they have that kind of insight. And of course, when there is a happy member of the Sangha, we want to be close to him or to her. But we don't forget that the other person who still have difficulty, we should be close to him or to her also in order to help that person. That is true love. You are just newly ordained as a novice. You still have a lot of things to learn. And yet, you can already make a big contribution to the Sangha, the way you walk. Every step you make has peace, has enjoyment, has solidity and freedom in it. You nourish yourself by every step that you make. And at the same time, you nourish the Sangha. If in the Sangha there are people who walk like that, the Sangha will have a high quality of practice. Because if a newly ordained novice walk like that, and then his big brothers and sisters should do at least like him, and then the collective initiative of Sangha should be powerful. And a Sangha like that is a true Sangha. And everyone who comes to the Sangha, to such a Sangha, will profit from the collective energy, the second source of nutriment. So a newly ordained novice can do a lot in order to help build the Sangha, improve the quality of the Sangha. He does not need to be ordained as a bhikshu or a Dhamma teacher in order to make the happiness of the people and his own happiness. The present moment is enough for you to do the things that you want to do. When the new novice opened the water tap, he's fully present. He see the water flowing out. He know that the water has come from deep from the earth, or high up from the mountain. He can see that. Because as a novice, he learned, and he learned and know by heart the Gatha, that he should use while he opened the water tap. The water comes deep from the earth. The water comes high up from the mountain. The water flow miraculously until here, and my gratefulness for the water is immense. He memorized. As a novice, he memorized the Gatha. And while he opened the water tap, he recited the Gatha, and he is fully present with the water. In that moment, he enjoyed the water flowing on his fingers. He is happy, he is mindful. And that is contribution to the Sangha. So when Thầy was ordained as a novice, he was given a book of Gatha like that in classical Chinese. So he learned by heart. And every time he brushed his teeth, he has a Gatha. Every time he put on his Sangati, he has a Gatha to practice. And of course, the aspirants in the upper hamlet, in the new hamlet, in the lower hamlet, have been given these gathas to learn by heart. And they don't need to be ordained in order to begin practice. They have already begun the practice. And they practice not only for themselves, they practice for their parents, for their ancestors. They practice for the Sangha society. Because the peace, the happiness that they get is not for them only, for everyone. So you are in the lower hamlet and you walk from your residence to the meditation hall. You walk in such a way that you can produce joy and peace and calm with every step. You do that for all of us. You do that for the whole world and not just for yourself. And you have to be aware of that. Peace in yourself, peace in the world. If you want to serve the world, you have to have the peace within yourself first. The policeman, the police officer, is sometimes called a peace officer. And if the peace officer doesn't have peace in himself, how can he serve the peace in society, in his neighborhood? And that is why to train policemen, we need this kind of thing. And we have a Dhamma teacher who practices as a police officer during 20 years. And she has helped train thousands of policemen in this field. She lives in Madison, Wisconsin. And she is a Dhamma teacher in the Plum Leisure tradition, and she has trained thousands of police officers in this spirit. If you don't have peace in yourself, how can you help preserve the peace in your neighborhood, in your society? A novice can be a bodhisattva right in the here and the now. A bodhisattva is someone who practices the six paramitas. the sixth kind of practice that can bring you to the other shore, the shore of peace, the shore of contentment, the shore of non-fear. Every time we are on this, if notice that we are still on this shore, the shore of anger, the shore of suffering, of despair, we should do something in order to get to the other shore. And that is why we need the six paramitas. And the first paramita is understanding, is prajna, prajna paramita. Understanding. Prajna balamat. Suppose you are angry and you feel anger in yourself. You suffer. You are on this shore, the shore of suffering, the shore of anger. And since you are bodhisattva, you don't want to stay in on this shore. You want to cross over to the other shore, the shore of no anger. You don't say, the other shore, please come so that I can step on you. You have to cross. And understanding prajna is one of the means to cross it. When you understand the other person, when you see the suffering in that person, he does not know how to handle the suffering. He suffers, he makes himself suffer, and he makes the people around him suffer. When you look and understand like that, suddenly you are on the other shore. That understanding brings you to the other shore right away. There's another paramita called dana. Giving. The Buddha said that there are many ways in order to deal with your anger. One of the ways is to give him something, to give her something. Usually when we are angry at someone, we want to punish him or her. We don't want him to or her to be happy, right? But the Buddha advised us to do the opposite. Make something to have him happy. Offer him something. And suddenly your anger disappears and you find yourself on the other shore. You might like to try this, my friends. You know your beloved one, what she likes. So you buy the gift and you hide it somewhere. And one day you get angry at her. And you remember the advice of Buddha, you go and take the gift and you give it to her. And both of you will be on the ashore right away. You try, it works. That person needs love. And if you can provide him or her with love, understanding, your anger is no longer there. The time you take for crossing to the other shore can be very short. That is a miracle. And as a bodhisattva, you want only to live. Anything you can give. And the most valuable things to give is understanding and compassion. People are craving for that. Everyone in the world crave for understanding and compassion and love. And as a bodhisattva, you can produce that. As a practitioner, you can produce understanding and compassion. Look deeply in the situation, and suddenly you don't blame anymore, you feel compassion. And the way you look at him, at her, the compassion is already a gift. When you look at him like that, you don't suffer. And when he sees you looking at him like that, he feels wonderful. That is why understanding can bring you to that shore very quickly. It's called prajna paramita, the kind of wisdom, the kind of understanding, the kind of insight that can bring you to that shore. And you are a novice that is newly ordained. You can practice as a bodhisattva. When you have some difficulty with a brother or a sister in the Dharma, you just look at him or her, and you use your concentration. And out of that, you understand, and you are not angry anymore. Because you can embrace him or her with your understanding and your compassion. There is another practice called Shanti. Nhẫn, nhẫn nhục ba la mật. The environment, in the environment, there are things you have to bear. There's a lot of violence, misunderstanding, craving, dictatorship, discrimination. And the situation of the world is like that. You have to accept. Because this is an invention that is a collective creation of our mind. If the world situation of the world is like that, because we, the human race, has created the world like that. That is our collective karma, a collective creation. We cannot blame. So we begin to accept the world like that. There are social injustice. There is social injustice. There is social oppression, discrimination. The collective mind has created like that. We have to accept. And that is the practice of forbearance, patience. First, we have to accept the situation like that in order to find ways to change. The cause of global warming has come from ourselves, the way we live our daily life. A collective karma. If we don't practice forbearance, patience, and then we give up to our despair and our anger, that's not good. The worst thing that can happen to us is despair. So practice in such a way that despair will not manifest. anger will not pull us away. And if we are taken, if we are overwhelmed, if we are taken away by despair and anger, violence, there's nothing left, no hope left. That is why the third practice of paramita is to bear, to accept. But this is not a kind of negative, passive acceptance. Because we know that we can, with our understanding, with our love, we can do something. We can always do something. The three things we have to bear in the teaching of Mahayana Buddhism, there are things from outside we have to bear. Social injustice, oppression, discrimination, global warming, all these things we have to bear. And there is something that is in us we have to bear. The afflictions, the weakness, the anger, the fear that has been transmitted to us by former generations. We have to bear. With the practice, we can ease the pressure coming from outside. With the practice, we can ease the pressure coming from the inside. The afflictions like anger, fear, that we have received from our ancestors, they are inside, we have to deal with. The pressure coming from the outside, we have to bear. But if we don't practice understanding and compassion and giving, we cannot bear. It is by great understanding and great compassion that you can accept easily the pressure from outside and from inside. So whatever negative, unwholesome that we find around us and inside of our community, that is the outcome of the past karma, the past action, we have to accept, we have to bear. But with great understanding and compassion, it's much easier for us to accept. Otherwise, we will give up and we will be victim of despair and violence and anger. And if we allow ourselves to be the victim of despair and violence, there is nothing left as hope. And in Mahayana Buddhism, patience is also concerning enlightenment. You know that your nature is nature of no birth and no death. You know in principle, and you know intellectually, then your nature is nature of no birth and no death. And yet, you have not directly experienced that. It takes time. It takes patience. You have learned that things are impermanent, things are without self. You accept them intellectually. And yet you have not experienced directly that fact. You need more practice. You need more mindfulness and concentration so that the thing that you have learned become a real insight. you have notions, you have understanding of that teaching, and yet you don't experience directly. It takes time. And that is the third aspect of forbearance, of patience, that we learn from Mahayana Buddhism. No birth and no death. Voshin Fapnyang. Fapnyang. We have Brother Fapnyang here. Dharma prescriptions. The no birth, no birth, no death. That is the highest achievement that a practitioner can get. Touching our true nature, the nature of no birth and no death. We understand it, we accept it intellectually, and yet we have not actually touched it. We know that the nature of a cloud is the nature of no birth and no death. We know that our true nature is also the nature of no birth and no death. We have seen it intellectually. We are convinced, but because our concentration, our mindfulness are not powerful enough, we have not fully realized it. So that is the third aspect of patience talked about in the teaching of Mahayana Buddhism.